It's methodical.
It's happening. Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
This is it. This is the big episode everyone's been waiting for.
Yeah.
Season 4, episode 11, when they ditch the HTTP status codes and they just go with a random name.
Exit.
This is the first one in the season that was not a status code. Don't know what it means. It's a very different episode, I guess. It's not super different. We had that Alpha episode a couple of seasons ago.
Sure.
After having watched this episode, what do you think?
So, I guess I feel a lot of times when these shows, these big mystery box shows are coming up to the conclusion, I get a little gripped up because, you know, I've invested a lot of years of my life. And I've invested a lot of hours of my time making this podcast, researching stuff, responding to voicemails. So I like to see the effort pay off. And when I was watching, like, there is a point where I got completely engrossed in the White Rose Elliot duel. And I thought that was an amazing bit of writing and something to kind of like a statement from the show that I've kind of been waiting. Like, what the fuck do you, what's your prescription for us as people? You know, I felt like I got that moment and then it blew up and faded to red. And I'm like, shit, wow, that's a crazy episode. Sam Esmail really fucking swung for the fences. I can't wait to see what's next. The episode's not over.
Yeah.
And then we got this watch. Crazy off the wall through the looking glass, you know, F society, F Corp E society, episode. And I'm like, you know what? This might be a mess at the end of the day, but I respect the fact that he is appearing to just go for it. Like it's still with two episodes to go, like, you know, one big movie long length episode. Everything is still on the table. There's time travel there if you want it. There's alternate dimensions there if you want it. There's simulation theory if you want it. It's all in his fucked up, like, you know, Russian nesting doll mind of his. Like,
yeah.
And I really dig it. And there's been so many Easter eggs and stuff that people have pulled out of from like season one that were hinting at like musical cues. The fact that, there was a poster where the E logo was in rainbow, just like this. Like, there's so many things that he seemingly has planted from the beginning that I'm excited to see what happens. It might not quite live up to our expectations, but I respect for the fact that this guy's going for something audacious. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think from the beginning, Sam Esmail has had the end in mind, which is always, in my opinion, going to make a better show. And he said, I think he said as much about the last two episodes or one long episode being essentially the movie he wanted to create when he came up with the idea for the Mr. Robot concept. And that this series has all been leading up to this. The last two episodes were going to be that. So I guess the question remains, what is Sam Esmail's storytelling style? Because I feel like this has not been the storytelling yet. Like, we're still waiting for Sam Esmail to unveil the storytelling that he's actually been doing or building to.
Yeah.
And it's weird to feel this sort of just lost at sea in a show this close to the end of it. I don't think I've ever gotten this far into a show and been like, I honestly have no idea which direction this is going to go.
Right.
And there are three possibilities. I couldn't pick one if I had to. And every single, it's funny because you look on Reddit and basically every comment ends with, I guess we'll have to wait and see till next week.
Yeah.
You know, five more days until we know.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, that's all you can do, because I feel like every time somebody points out a fact that like pushes it in a direction, somebody points out another fact and pushes it back the other way. And I don't know where that leads me.
Yeah,
it leaves me excited, I guess, for the end, just to see what's going to happen.
No, I think, it's just really excited to. It's exciting to be at this stage where it's, because I can think of a lot of places where I've been with shows where I didn't know where they're going this close to the end, but I was more of an impatient, like, I'm getting sick of this, or, you know, I can't believe they're going this direction. But like, yeah, the fact that I'm this engaged and it's been this long, and you mentioned, because I
don't really know what style of show I'm watching. I know,
right,
if it's a sci-fi. I know if it's a psycho thriller. I know if it's what it is. This show, I don't know what it is yet.
This is like 5 minutes till the end of The Matrix and Neo just gets out of the goo vat.
Yeah.
Like, what the?
Right.
And
I don't know if the goo vat is in his head or if it's real or if he's in a simulation. Like,
Can't trust this Morpheus guy.
Right.
So Sam Esmail said at the end of season one that, like, at the end of the day, you'll properly understand all of season one to be the prologue of the story he actually wants to tell.
Okay.
And I remember, you know, I've got podcasts to this effect. I'm like, okay, this seems like bullshit, but whatever, we'll see. It now feels like the entire series has been a prologue to properly understand this thing. It's like the world's largest and most elaborate rocket to shoot the smallest payload into space, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
this is Elon Musk shooting a Tesla into space.
Yeah. It's like getting the Saturn V and launching a shoebox into orbit.
Yeah.
Because there's just 2 hours of television, but I don't think that that's unfair. You know, like, that's what's going to be really fascinating when we see these next two episodes this weekend. I'm going to be looking to see, like, I wonder with another 15-minute, like, prologue, like, or what you could do to make this into an actual movie event.
I mean, I have no...
it sounds crazy that the final thing's going to end up with a movie that he's had envisioned the entire time. This is like a giant Sabo round to deliver this thing.
Right.
Like,
could I even understand that movie without the context of 4 seasons of television?
Yeah. Yeah. Can you imagine? It's like, you know, people complained about the Dune movie who's your least favorite
David
director?
Lynch.
Yeah. David Lynch Dune movie. Ugh. It's like, God, you had to read like all the Dune books to understand the Dune movie. It's like, get a load of this. Watch 40 hours of television to be able to properly have the context.
To be fair, it takes 40 hours to read Dune at least.
Oh yeah. All of them. But
certainly all of them.
But I think there is, if you can do that well, it's just going to make that a hell of a movie.
Yeah.
Because the problem with the movies is they only have 2 hours to build an emotional connection to the characters and build the stakes. Like, we have emotional connection to Elliot and his crew out the wazoo.
Mm-hmm.
We've got stakes that are like, you know, could be anywhere from like the fate of the world to the fractured identity of this person we care about.
Yeah.
You know, lives are at stake. I just like, when White Rose blew her brains out, I like yelped. Like, I couldn't, I'm like, I just couldn't fucking believe it. Like, that's the most audacious thing. Like, Darth Vader, like, running his lightsaber through his chest right before the Emperor fries Luke. It's crazy. How can this, what a gutsy call by Sam Esmail.
Yeah.
To do this to us.
And like I said, I'm still completely up in the air. I'm happy that I haven't come into this with a ton of expectations. I do favor definitely that this is going to be a little more grounded than like some epic sci-fi twist at the end. But honestly, if it happens, it happens. I'm not super concerned with that. As long as he can deliver an emotionally satisfying end to this story, I think it'll be all worth it.
Yeah, I could. I mean,
I feel bad for the people who are very much like, no, you guys are all wrong. This is absolutely how it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And getting very invested in how this thing ends.
Yeah, and that's one thing I've tried to avoid doing this entire season is to try to, I think my coverage has been consistent. Like, I've tried to be very agnostic about how sci-fi this might get, how grounded and real this might be. Because, like, honestly, if this is some kind of, like, weird piece of psychotherapy, like, I'd almost be willing to accept that like it's all a dream because this show is weird enough that I could see that.
I mean, season four kind of set me up for a sort of, you know, mind-bending conclusion to this, right?
Yeah.
Like that kind of twist.
Yeah, like if he wakes up and he's in Krista's office and this has been some intensive psychotherapy or something and his dad, I think that's a really interesting concept. But man, I tell you what, as far as the sci-fi thing, the thing is the sci-fi stuff can so neatly be explained by this is a nerdy young man who's had substance abuse problems and he's got mental illness and he's been emotionally, sexually abused, physically abused. This is just his way of like coping, like all these fantasies and the things that he grew up in, he's incorporating into this story to tell himself to make sense of the world. Uh-huh. You know, and there's a lot of hints to that. We're going to talk about this episode.
Him being in jail and thinking he's in his mother's house.
Exactly.
Is a huge
like
one.
It's almost like that part of season, like it'd be incredible if that like got part of the season two that we hate is redeemed because it's essentially a hit that Sam Esmail took to like teach us a language that he's going to, you know, tell the finale in.
Right. I was joking when I said this is the episode everyone has been waiting for because of the name. Hmm. But this is the episode everyone's been waiting for. Tyrell's alive.
He is.
If
Angela's
only
alive.
In some imagined alternate sci-fi universe, Tyrell is alive. Are you happy? Are you happy, fans?
He's
who
home for Christmas, if only in your
could
dreams.
Not get their head around Camus' writings.
A death howl was actually just a teleporter whine opening to suck him into
right.
the new.
He got teleported into an alternate universe.
I mean, as we will discuss, there is something to like death being a transition to the new world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some competitors, some really interesting stuff around Elliot's dad vis-a-vis that theory. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're either going to just all theory talk. We're going to have to get into the episode.
Let's do it.
Housekeeping.
This housekeeping is all about saying Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. First off, Merry Christmas, because we're right in the middle of our Mary McAllister McClainmas 2 Christmas Harder celebrations. Last week, of course, we took in Larry the Cable Guy's misguided sequel to the Arnold Schwarzenegger flop, Jingle All the Way 2. Again, much like Home Alone 2 before it, the video podcast on this one is a must-see and exclusive to club members. This week, it's Die Hard 2's turn for the treatment. Bruce Willis trades in his white wife beater for a cozy Christmas sweater as all hell breaks loose at Dulles International Airport. In the immortal words of Ace News reporter Richard Thornburg's producer, "Dick, this is nuts!" We get a live watch, a podcast, and a video podcast dropping this Wednesday. Next week, it's Christmas, and on Christmas Eve, we'll drop one last gift podcast for our club members, a podcast for a beloved Christmas classic. I won't spoil the surprise. You're just going to have to wait for Santa. And we're also wrapping up a lot of things this week. Watchmen, put to bed. Mr. Robot, staying up past its bedtime with a double episode next weekend, which we'll cover after Christmas. Cecily and Alexis are wrapping up his Dark Materials the day after Christmas because, what can I say, they just love you all that much. Jim and I will be watching a lot of Expanse over the break so we can come back and talk it up in the new year. Speaking of, our early lineup for 2020 looks like it's going to have a lot of Picard, the new Pope, and Better Call Saul in it. And of course, somewhere out there, Westworld Season 2 awaits with Aaron Paul. I'm excited, but before all that, we're taking a week or so off to celebrate with our friends and family. So in conclusion, have a very Merry Christmas, a very Happy Holidays, and a wonderful New Year.
We go back to the night of the hack with the FBI. Well, which hack? The hack that finally takes down the Deus group and transfers all their money to the people. With the FBI raiding White Rose's house, her goons win the battle, and she's escorted out by them. We kind of don't see much here. Although it is carnage in her house. Very Scarface.
FBI agent didn't follow bald move rule number 2.
Play dead.
Like, I get it. You're in a lot of pain. You got a sucking chest wound. But you know what sucks worse than a chest wound? A shot to the fucking head.
Yeah, Dom's living proof.
You gotta
can survive
that,
the chest
yeah,
wound.
Yeah, you got to keep that wheeze to yourself, man.
Right.
You know, I did think it's funny that White Rose gives this. Because I first thought, I'm like, oh, she's actually saying something like a warning that the FBI would take, like that he's or you know this guy's dead or whatever. But no, she's just flexing on life in general. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, she's talking to us, the audience.
Yeah, I was just looking like how many of her own dudes are dead. Like there's a lot of dudes that got killed in this whole raid, and
the people in masks are her dudes. The people without masks are the FBI.
Yeah, but like that's. It just goes into like how fanatical that her believers are. And
yeah, we asked the question like, were the FBI ready? Did they know what they were walking into here?
Yeah,
they
were strapped
fucking
up, ready for fun. They looked like a Counter-Strike unit.
But they still didn't know what
still
they were
got
prepared
their ass
for.
Waxed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't know it was going to be that crazy and fanatical.
Right.
And yeah, like most, like a lot of these movies and television shows, I always think like, you know, like when I'm playing the Uncharted games, I'm like, man, after the 500th dude in tactical gear that I've killed that's working for this millionaire, like, when did they, like, you know what? I've looked at the compensation, the 401k plans, and
yeah,
this fucking Drake guy's crazy. It's not worth it. It's not worth it. I shot him with a grenade launcher. He hid behind a crate for 5 seconds. He came back and killed my partner. Like, I'm getting the fuck out of here. I mean, at least in this, it's like they are believers in her project that grants some form of heavenly life.
Sure.
And she believes it too, it seems like.
Yeah, if you can convince people that their death is either meaningful or not actually a true death,
yeah,
what can convince them to do a lot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That tracks.
And then we go back to Elliot hugging Darlene at the motel as they part ways. And Elliot thanks Darlene for never giving up on him, even through all the shit he's been through.
Yeah, interesting that they show us that perspective that we didn't get from, you know, they cut before and we kind of saw them wide angle as we focused on Dom.
Yeah, and it really leads into the discussion he has with White Rose later, right?
Yeah.
Letting us know that he values the stick to Elliot mentality that Darlene's shown throughout this whole ordeal.
Yeah, the unconditional love.
Uh-huh. Mr. Robot tells Elliot that he shouldn't go after White Rose's machine. They need to leave. Elliot's already written this malware to take down the machine, and he's hell-bent on destroying White Rose. And Mr. Robot says, look, this is an endless war. We need to move on. But Elliot sees his family looking on, and he tells Mr. Robot to go with him so he can do this one on his own.
There's a couple things here, like, as because we've talked about, as much as I like this season, some of the tech details have been sloppy.
I
can't imagine a hack that you could do to a nuclear facility that would take decades to recode, reprogram. Even if you like did something physical, like wrecked centrifuges or whatnot, it's like decades. I don't know.
So I think what he's doing here, if I saw the hack correctly, and I didn't go back and look at this. I just caught it on first viewing. But I think he's doing effectively the same thing he did on 5.9, which is encrypting all their code and then just storing it somewhere, right? Like,
yeah,
so that they can have access to it, which means they have to recode the entire project from scratch, likely. You know, in as much as they couldn't just pull up the records of the 5.9 stuff. That's at least what I got. He did a lot of unzipping up of stuff and encrypting and packaging and all that stuff.
Well, I mean, that's the whole thing, because like when they did the 5.9 hack, the first thought is, well, they'll restore from backup. Yeah. And then season two is like, oh shit, they can restore from backup. You got to take out the backup. Yeah, I don't know. Like, if this is so, like, it's weird. Like, Elliot did the 5.9 hack and then realized the folly of the 5.9 hack and had to do it over again. So, like, in the same world, we see him essentially outline the exact same strategy, would have the exact same flaw. But I guess maybe that plays into Mr. Robot's part. There'll always be a mission. There'll always be an unforeseen circumstance. I don't know.
I mean, he's definitely telling him that here.
Yeah. It's
always
like
a new enemy.
It's one of those things where, like, I just don't understand the hack well enough and the technology. It's just that seemed a little Pollyanna to me.
Yeah. So then Elliot takes the bus to Washington Township, and he sees several white vehicles racing away from the power plant, and this whole place has been hastily and messily abandoned, it appears. He searches the place. He's not seeing anybody there. He's looking for a terminal to jack into, and then he finds one. He runs the malware. He's won. Everything is great, except he sees a body, and the cops show up, and, oh yeah, the Dark Army's there too.
Great musical choice throughout this episode.
Yeah.
Heroes and Villains by the Beach Boys. First time I heard that song.
Me too.
Time I heard the song was Fantastic Mr. Fox. It's a Wes Anderson pull.
Oh, really? It's in there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. And I thought it's a cool song as it changes like tempo and stuff at various times and slows down and kind of is a little melancholy. And they play with that as, you know, they kind of narrate. And they make a meal of his transition from wherever they are in Connecticut to Washington Township power plant. But so this is the first evidence that we're being fucked with. Elliot shows up to this thing. He sees people hightailing it out, but he goes and looks at a guard shack where it's been ransacked, but there's no bodies. He goes in the lobby and everything's been torn up and, you know, tossed, but there's no bodies. And he just kind of blissfully goes, almost with a weird kind of smile on his face with the hack. Mm-hmm. As soon as it completes, then he sees bodies. And as we parade him through the facility to the White Rose interrogation, there's bodies everywhere.
Yeah.
What happened?
So let me throw another wrinkle onto this.
Okay.
White Rose says later in this episode that the machine was already on at this point.
Yes.
Before he ran the malware, the machine was on.
Yeah. She did the Ozymandias thing.
Here's the explanation that I guess... Okay, one of the explanations, and I'm not sure where I fall on this, because I don't know where I fall in the vast majority of this episode. One of the explanations is that this is sort of a Mr. Robot-esque state that he's in, trying to essentially protect his mission. And if he saw all these bodies, and if he saw the carnage here, he might be scared off it.
Yeah, because he's...
And so his mind is not showing him the bodies that are there.
So... Who did that shielding? Was it the Mr. Robot that was supposed to sit it out, or was it the third? Because I saw speculated that like the third persona, the mysterious persona, the one that like takes Vera in stride, is the one who, you know, kind of shielded, because they knew that Elliot without Mr. Robot wouldn't be able to go through with the wading through the carnage he'd have to get to that goal. And like I was even like in the first time I was watching, I'm like, where are the fucking cops?
Yeah.
Like, there's this, like, and I thought it was weird that there's no bodies because it seemed like there should be. But I'm like, well, fuck, I don't know how many people work in a power plant. Maybe it's like 12 or 13 people and we just haven't seen them yet. But, like, yeah. I saw that something was wrong. And then, you know, as soon as he installs the malware, the cops show up and all hell breaks loose. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that they're also suggesting that we're already in some sort of simulated state? And this is kind of like when.
Yeah.
You know how shit in the Matrix happens weird where like you're supposed to understand that the pill Neo takes is actually a tracing program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's some very Matrix-y stuff going on here too.
Yeah, like the code that the malware to disrupt the machine might have done something to the actual simulation he's running on, if you want to go with that theory, and that's what's causing the chaos and upheaval.
I saw that theory. I'm less on board with the simulation stuff.
Yeah.
Because that to me does not seem like a true different world, like a parallel universe, which is what White Rose calls it.
Mm-hmm. But White Rose is not above lying to people. Like, if she can shoot herself in a simulation just so.
But to what end? Like, because this is her project and she wants her lover back. She doesn't want a simulation to fool her into thinking that she's
got
her
lover back.
Unless she believes
simulation is the real thing. I mean, she's also kind of crazy. But it feels like you're advocating the position, which you may or may not be, that a parallel reality that you can jump through with a machine is more probable than a simulation.
Given the nature of the machine that we've seen, right? It's a particle accelerator of some kind. What does a particle accelerator get you for a simulation?
I don't really
Unless
know how it gets you
about
into
some...
another dimension either, but... Is it just like in a random sci-fi sense of like, hey, we're fantastic energies? And...
If you want to connect the dots with a very large hadron collider of some kind, and black holes and extra dimensions and
I see.
Alternate universes, there's more connective tissue there than there is to
I
like.
I think you've won me over. I think you've won me over.
Unless it's quantum computer, you know.
See,
and then, I know, man. That's why you can't really.
Now you
this
talk
one
me
down.
Right back out. Simulation theory for life. I really am agnostic. I'm just pointing out like possible explanations and weird shit that we're supposed to notice. We're talking about, we can talk about his slow, you know, very cool walk through the facility with a fan favorite, what are we calling him? Like Intel clean room guy with the
hamburger
fetish?
Guy.
Hamburger guy.
Yeah. Is what I think he's officially called in the credits.
Ah, hamburger guy. If a hamburger guy got a line.
I used to call him sandwich guy.
Sandwich guy.
But I guess hamburger guy is it.
Hamburger guy. I can rock with hamburger guy.
We're about to get to that. You wanna,
they go
want
to, they
to
go
recap
to, I just
want
to talk about the corridor that leads up to the room. Mm-hmm. And they had all these portraits of people that have different colored tape on them. Did you see the theory about the colors and the dimensions?
Not exactly, but I can tell you who those people are and what they did.
They're theoretical physicists, right?
Yeah, so the first one who's covered in red is Hugh Everett. He's a mini worlds. He's a quantum physicist who kind of created the many worlds interpretation of the multiverse, or quantum physics in general. Then there's Brian Greene, who's covered in black. He's a theoretical physicist, a string theorist, and author of a book on several books on multiverses. Mm-hmm. There's Eugene Wigner, who is white, and he is a theoretical physicist who worked on the Manhattan Project. And at the very end, there's Schrodinger, who is covered in black, and I think you know who that is.
Yeah. He's the guy who has the famous Schrodinger's cat theorem.
Yeah, he was a crazy cat man.
Yeah, to describe quantum states.
Yeah.
So one of the theories goes is that the colors that are blacking out these gentlemen's faces correspond to different dimensions.
Okay.
And like who is alive and well in which dimension, like, and the way that theory works out is
three overall dimensions.
So we opened up the series against a black background with Elliot monologuing about welcoming us as friends and what to do with us, et cetera, et cetera. And so the entirety of Mr. Robot thus far has taken place in the black dimension, which is like the worst possible timeline, the most dystopic timeline. Hmm. And that we just switched midway through this episode to the red dimension.
Yeah.
That is the, I guess, White Rose Ascendant dimension or the Utopian dimension. And then there's potentially like a white dimension. And there's a potential, like, I think blue is another color.
Was it? Not on these, but there are
black,
other
white, and
portraits.
Red for sure.
Yeah,
and then there's,
which would tie in nicely with a third altar.
Yeah, so I don't think that's very persuasive because it doesn't have a lot of predictive power. It's kind of like something a game Angel was playing, like which people, like something she was trying to figure out in her apartment, like which people, which timeline can I choose to bring the most people back or something. Like she's color sorting through it. But the reason I don't like it is because it doesn't have any predictive power at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing, like, that's something that tells you something, but what is, how do you test a theory? You have to make a prediction and see if it holds up, and I don't see what the predictive power of that is.
It's more of a hindsight thing. Like, once we know, once we see the next episode,
we might be
able to go back and say, okay, this is clear now.
It might be interesting hindsight kind of thing, but it doesn't seem like it's helping us figure out anything.
Yeah. I went back and I did a lot of looking at like Angela's interview scene, because we're about to get to an interview scene here with Elliot, and the similarities and the differences. Same. And one of those similarities is as they walk her down the hall to the room where she's interviewed random suburban home, all the people's faces are colored in black, red, and white.
Yeah.
So it's not just, I think you sort of have to throw out the scientist part of this, like, it doesn't have anything to do with these people being theoretical physicists or
people's faces.
Multiverse theorists. It's just, yeah, like the key here is the faces are covered in colors, and I don't know how to unlock that door.
Anything before you completely move on to the interrogation or the psychology quiz or the choice? What did you make of the 1950s style billboard?
I didn't really look into those.
There wasn't much like commentary on it. It's just a weird thing that I think you're supposed to notice. It's like like almost a Back to the Future era, like 1955. Look at our power plant. It's going to be the power of the future. Mm-hmm. But it looks pristine, like it was just installed the other day. So it's like, is this the Washington Township power plant being retro with their marketing? Or is this another kind of like time fuckery type of thing that we're supposed to? I don't know.
The machine was already on.
The machine is already on. It's been running for 4 seasons. Stop.
It might have been. Who knows? So Hamburger Guy takes Elliot to see White Rose, and they have a conversation here where Elliot says this brainwashing shit's not going to work. White Rose says it's not brainwashing shit. It's about coming to an understanding.
And it's going to totally work, and just give me 10 minutes.
Yeah. And they do come to an understanding during the scene of each other, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They argue about their motivations. White Rose, when Elliot accuses her of hating people, White Rose laughs in his face and says, no, you're the one who hates society. Look at the name of your group. Elliot admits, yes, that's true, I did. And now he's coming around on it. And she kind of seems, I don't know, like dislodged by his argument a bit. Like by the passion with which he sort of delivers, which if you can call that passion from Elliot.
Like when he corked that fuck you, his eyes widened so briefly that I thought they would exceed the already impressive structural integrity of his eye sockets.
I think
God, he was within 1 millimeter of this him shooting the fuck out of his skull.
Uh-huh.
But it's like maybe who's incredible performances by both of them.
Oh, this scene is amazing.
I kind of want to just, like, B.D. Wong, the things that he's doing are very hard, like, vocally, just body language-wise, because he's trying to sell a very smart, and I think sympathetic. Like, what White Rose is trying to do is what I've been saying for like this whole season. Like, I'm not sure that when we hear her plan, we can't step back and be like, oh, all right, that actually sounds like a pretty good plan. It's just the way you're going about it is horrific.
Still a sympathetic villain.
A sympathetic villain in the same way that like Magneto, like hero. As a non-mutant, I can see Magneto's point. I still don't want him to enslave me as a non-mutant, but you know, he's had a pretty put upon life and he's had a lot of unfortunate historical events happen to him. So I thought it was incredible. The vocal work that he does, like, you know, the way he distinguishes the White Rose from the Zhang is incredible and it continues to be so. And the rapid fire whiplash run of emotion that he has to do is as incredible as anything that Joaquin Phoenix did in Joker. And, he's getting tons of praise for that. And, like, there's a couple things I thought were just chilling. Like, when she goes, you know, don't make me laugh. The second time she says, don't make me laugh, and throws in F Society in his face. It's the point where she goes from don't make me laugh to, on the contrary, my love for people drives me. She goes from like unhinged kind of Joker to like all business and deadly serious and like a heartbeat. And it's fucking amazing.
I mean, this scene is an exercise in like stillness and chaos, in calm and ferocity, right? Like the balance of power here switches back and forth multiple times in this scene. And Elliot, who I'm not used to in the presence of White Rose seeming like the anchor, the rock of a scene, here very much feels like it. Until we get to the end where White Rose sort of attempts to, whether she's successful or not, I don't know, take that power back and show him what she's been trying to show him all along, what she showed Angela. I love the dynamics in this scene. It's incredible.
And I thought that there's a point in the middle of White Rose's argument where she's like, you know, we're told constantly by our leaders, by our scientists, by religious authorities that our world is crumbling around us and it's our fault. We're to blame.
Yeah.
And we are filled with so much self-hatred that hating yourself is no longer considered like a weird trait, but like a given. Mm-hmm. And when I look at like, especially like young people online and how like the black humor that they engage in, the like the joking about suicide and depression, it reminds me of like 50s and 60s area like Soviet bloc humor. You know, like when things are like, you are so fucking down in the hole and it's inconceivable to see your lot in life materially changing. I thought God, that's an astute point, because I certainly believe that psychologically, like, self-hatred is bad. And yet, like, we're just bombarded with images and things about how we're fucking things up. And it's unfortunate that they're very difficult to hear. And they're all very true. And I don't think we as people are designed to deal with like the weight of 7 billion people and the whole planet like resting on our shoulders. Like,
yeah,
that's way above
species,
the pay grade of a monkey.
We have multiplied faster than our society has evolved, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're desperately trying to catch up.
Yeah, there's a famous like either physicist or science fiction writer quote of like our technological progress has exceeded our moral and ethical progress.
Probably.
Like, I feel like our social technology is definitely kind of lagged further behind. But I thought that was a great. And then Elliot, you know, you're like, wow, strong case against humanity there. Let's hear it for the defense. And I thought Elliot rose to the occasion talking about the healing power of love and how.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're all fucked up, but we also try and. You know, that's going to happen no matter what. And you're right. We're told we don't stand a chance, but still we stand.
Right. And neither of them are wrong in this scene. It's just, how do they approach the solution to this problem? And I think Elliot has taken White Rose's route before, you know, refashion the world in a way that you think is going to be more pleasant for you and the people around you. And he's seen the folly of that.
Yeah. You mentioned something about her being emotionally set back. I think it's like what she says is that I thought she thought that they were on the same side.
Yeah.
That when Elliot...
That like, he would just understand this intuitively.
Yeah. That like, I don't... This is as soon as I explain it from my point of view, you're going to be like, oh, God, of course. Mm-hmm. And she was genuinely disappointed that that wasn't the case. But it's weird because, like, is that also part of the brainwashing?
It's a fair question because there's a lot of shit that goes on in Angela's
Do you want to talk about, like,
interview?
Because, like, Angela reached a point where she's like, no, fuck this. I'm not going to go along with it. And they threatened to beat the little girl to get her to comply with the interview.
Right. And then they had to come in and say, well, that was all a sham. That was all manipulation to get you to just cooperate with the interview so we could tell whether you're a candidate or not.
Right. So what is White Rose doing to Elliot to get him to cooperate with her little test? Like, is this whole meltdown?
It could very well be part of it. Like, you look at Angela's interview, let's call it, and she's got the ticking clock, right, of this fish tank leaking. And you know what's a bigger, badder ticking clock is a nuclear meltdown about to happen, right? And you think the only way to save it is to play this game.
What do you make about her saying, the reason I wanted to move my project is because the proximity here is limited? Mm-hmm. I took it to whatever she's trying to do in the Congo would potentially affect the entire world. What she's doing here at Washington Township is going to affect a radius of a few, maybe 100 miles or so.
Yeah. I don't know the exact radius. I think you're just
guessing. It's just more, like, local in scale.
Not the whole
world. She's like tired of waiting. She was going to try to save the whole world, but fuck it. Yeah. She'll go with what she's got. She'll take everyone. But I don't know. How the fuck does that work?
So one person's paradise is another person's hell.
True.
How do you... So you can't put everybody into a single parallel universe that would be good for everyone.
Right. That's what the robots learn in the Matrix. Our primitive human minds rejects paradise. So
sure. Yeah. So if that's true, which I think it is, then how do you have to put everyone into their own parallel paradise universe, right?
Yeah, I don't know. Do you think it's actually impossible to create a utopia that, like, I get that not everybody will accept it because you're always going to have, like, the truly deranged, like, messed up in the head Jeffrey Dahmer types. Mm-hmm. Maybe less of them if you have a utopia. But, like, I don't know. I feel like you could create a utopia where 95% of the people would accept and be cool with. Like, it's all about resources and having enough of them and distributing them.
Is it because beliefs come into that, too? And I think, like, when we're talking about Mr. Robot.
Yeah, but here's the thing I noticed
you believe,
about...
Like, let's try and construct a utopia that will satisfy everyone right at the end of this show.
I'm going to suggest something.
It can't be done.
What if everyone's standard of living, minimum standard of living, was about $70,000 to $80,000 U.S. dollars a year? Because that's about where consistently studies show that beyond that much money making per individual... You don't get a commensurate increase in happiness. Like, that's what it takes to essentially be secure amongst yourself and make sure you have access to healthcare, a decent education, housing. Not every place. Like, that's not going to do you in San Francisco or Manhattan, but it'd do you really good in the Midwest and a lot of the South and a lot of rural places. What if everyone in the planet had that kind of, like, who says no to that?
The people who want more would say no to that.
So I'm just saying, like, so would that get like 99% of the world's population and you just spin off the Bill Gateses and the Bezoses off into their own instance where they can play cutthroat billionaire with each other?
Sure. It's weird, though, because I guess the limitation here is, who are you trying to help? Because if you're spinning people off into parallel universes where their fantasies come true, but everyone else suffers, then, and at the same time, you're spinning other people off into one where everyone's happy except for the 1% who desperately want more and can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
You're setting up two universes here that help the people in your universe prime, let's call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you're making a good portion of people in those other two universes you've created miserable. So aren't you just compounding the problem by creating more universes in which more people are miserable?
I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting question because, like, I feel like a lot of people just accept the Matrix thesis that humans won't accept a perfect life as like, well, of course we won't because, you know, we're fucked up. Why would we? But I'm like, I don't know. Because, like, there's a lot of research that says there is, like, once you start meeting people's, like, basic needs, like, a lot of the, like, for truly fanaticism, like, people that are, like... you make a person comfortable, they're a lot less likely to strap on a vest to blow themselves up or shoot up a clinic or,
for sure,
you know, make some kind of political stance with a gun. And I just, I don't know, it's like if there's a way that you could organize society to guarantee everyone had that.
And it's kind
of
tied
for it, of course, that would be that'd be a way to go. And if I was creating a simulation, maybe that's where I'd start.
And I mean, it's tied in with the stuff that Elliot says, or, you know, whoever the fuck this happy Elliot is.
Yeah. Well, there's other things you said somewhere.
Like, he says it like it's both the worst thing and the best thing about my life is that I'm in this boring routine.
Yeah. Because you also said something about like people's fantasies coming true. And it's like, is White Rose promising people's fantasies, or like is she's like, because her fantasy is that she gets to be the person she wants to be and love the person she wants to love. I don't think that's a fantasy. That seems like an imminently reasonable request that would be super easy to fulfill if people would just let it happen. Like all that needs to happen in society is for people to allow that to happen, and she gets her dream.
I guess I'm using fantasies there when I shouldn't be. Probably desires is more.
Well, but no, what I'm saying is like, because like, there again, like if everyone is comfortable and no one had to scrap for an existence, would people care a lot less about people breaking the rules and, you know, bucking the system and fucking things up for everybody if everybody was just getting along? I don't know.
Sure, but how long does that last? Like, how long does the kumbaya moment last?
As long as people keep getting paid.
Does it?
I mean, yeah, like I kind of do think if people's bellies were full and they had a roof over their heads and they had some entertainment and community options that they found fulfilling, that they take care of a lot of the world's problem. Maybe I'm naive. Maybe people need more. Maybe there needs to be more striving. But like, I don't know why that can't be in terms of knowledge and craftsmanship and relationships with other people. But
I guess like, okay, let's assume all that is true.
Uh-huh.
How do you find that parallel universe? How do you?
I think she's constructing
narrow it down.
It.
How do you like? Do you use?
That's what things like this parallel universe seems cuckoo to me. Like, it's like I don't know which one is more plausible, the simulation or, because you're right. Like, I guess my idea is that she was creating something. Like, she's creating a perfect world, and it's not perfect in the sense that like it's tailored to everyone. It's perfect in the sense that these companies seem like they actually take the public trust seriously and they take things like customers' satisfaction and safety seriously. And they're not trying to just make a buck. And like Tyrell's, I interpreted his unease as like, we've got something fragile and special here. And all it would take is like one person to be greedy and fuck it up. And how do you guarantee that no one's going to do that? And maybe that's the like the whole thing is like humanity eventually reverts to the mean.
I mean, that's like how do you preserve that kumbaya moment? That's, well,
yeah, how do you keep people
there,
from like, taking over and like taking more than their fair share? Yeah. And then you got the whole problem. I don't know.
Yeah, the people who desire more are going to strive toward that.
Every other week on Three Right Turns on the Swizzbold Network, I consider these questions.
Right.
I promise that wasn't a stealth ad, but hey,
okay,
here we are.
Let's get back to the scene. So unable to convince Elliot that she's correct, she has to show him.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to do this, she pulls out a gun and shoots herself in the head. And then the meltdown starts. Elliot has to play this game in the computer room. He runs out of time, sort of. I don't know. He solves the problem, but then the reactor goes off anyway, and Elliot and Mr. Robot both die in a fade to red. If I'm Sam Esmail, okay. Let me ask you what you think about this. And I don't know that I have a great answer to this question.
Okay.
Do you think that a show that deals with such sensitive and extraordinarily heavy topics as abuse and fragile mental states should depict a suicide that can cure all your ills? Because if I'm Sam Esmail, I'm very nervous about this fucking scene.
Well, yeah, especially since
and they did not
put
a warning on this one.
You're right, nor any like help, because I Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess in universe, it wasn't depicted as a suicide, though. It was depicted as some kind of transition, but that's the scary part.
Yeah, to me, is people might buy into this idea who are in fragile mental states and try to join her there.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
I would have at least put a warning on this because he's done it before. He clearly is
conscious. Like,
of
I was just thinking what happened to Olivia. That was an attempted suicide, and is like, you know, hey, they had the warning and the number you can call for help and everything. Yeah, it's an interesting point.
Probably not the point that they're trying to get out of here.
No, but I think
it's
valid.
Probably a lot more to talk about. So this room, can we just talk about the similarities and differences between Angela's setup?
Mm-hmm.
So the similarities, it's extremely similar. They both have fish tanks. They both have a meaningful book on the table. They both have an old computer, which appears to be the computer they had as a child. They're both visually
had,
similar
had
with blocky light
posters.
Sources.
Angela had to hang in there, and yeah, Elliot's had, got when life closes a door, open a window, or
a window opens, yeah, something like that. They both have this very dark, actually, it's a black room in both instances. And then there's a phone on the table for both of them. And a phone is something that could be identical. I don't see any reason to not make a phone identical unless you're trying to make a point. Angela's phone is red.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot's phone is blue.
It's
and that
what,
got me thinking
what color
Matrix,
dimensions are going to, man.
It got me thinking, yeah, like blue pill, red pill, Matrix, like harsh truth versus
Angela,
comforting illusion.
Angela accepted the red pill and Elliot took the blue one is what you're going for, right?
Yeah, but it almost seems to be the like Angela came away from that with some sort of comforting like blue pill type of numbness, right?
True.
Not a harsh reality of understanding the truth of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know where to go with that. I just noticed like with all of the other Matrix illusions that we've seen in this series, that seems to be yet another one.
Well, the crazy thing is that we've got another Elliot running around in the ensuing episode, and
right.
Angela was such a fundamentally different person in seasons like 3 through, you know, the beginning of 4 that I think you have to question whether she got displaced at some point in that experience with White Rose, and she turned her into a different person. In the same way that Tyrell is like more Elliot-like in this F dimension.
Yeah, it seems like she might have gone through some experience that Elliot is going through.
Yeah, it's also this
that,
is this another one-off thing, right? Like the dates were one-off, and the dimension that we or the existence that we are familiar with, and now there's one letter off. It's not E Corp, it's F Corp.
Yeah, and Elliot, when we talk about you know the fade to red, happy Elliot stuff here in a second. He comes back on 5-9, the day of the hack, the day that he has time missing. And here he shows up at the end of that, right? The door code is 5-9. There's clearly a lot of connective tissue, but fuck me if I can figure out what it is or if the internet at large can even figure this out, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it seems clear that like if, I mean, it seems clear to me or it makes sense to me that if he had left the game at the state of him leaving the friend that it would have gone nuclear, and then he'd woken up back at a true reboot of the series.
Okay, very much like a Zion reboot kind of thing. Yeah,
and since he chose the empathetic solution, he's now in the F world where everything's friendly. Where White Rose is free to be the person she wants to be. She's now a billionaire philanthropist. E Corp is a beloved company that is seen as a source of stability and prosperity by almost everyone, and has the public trust. It seems like our world only, the world works like we are taught like it does in sixth grade. Like when you take a civics and econ and the classes and they teach you like all the checks and balances and how they work properly. And it's a fucking delicate framework and how economics, how, you know, you
how
buy
genius.
Low, you sell high and, you know, you have the cost of this and the cost of that. And then you get in the real world and it's like all just, you know, fucked up. And
I can't fucking buy. I don't have any money.
Yeah, exactly.
How am I gonna buy?
Yeah. They got pot to piss in, let alone to buy anything.
Yeah.
So that seems like what they're going for, but then and also that's it's satisfying from like an Alderson loop, you know, that he's stuck in this loop and how do you get out of? So I guess the question is, so an Alderson loop is something where you put the machine in a state that it can't get itself out of with its present state of code, you know. So, like, did Elliot finding out what his father potentially did to him, is that going to be a big enough change that he is going to what's the end game here? Are we going to reboot again? Or is some new information going to be passed on that's going to get him out of the loop?
I mean, if I'm thinking of this in terms of, okay, next two episodes are basically a movie.
Mm-hmm.
What do you need to do in a movie? You need to kind of establish the scenario here.
Yeah.
And I could think you could do that in sort of an Edge of Tomorrow kind of way, Groundhog Day kind of way, right? Where you're running through a loop over and over. And you run through it faster and faster. And we've run through it already once, so we would understand immediately, oh, this is a loop.
Yeah.
And then I've seen theories that, like, when you look at what Elliot says about, like, thanking Darlene for being there for him throughout all this shit, saying, you know, the conclusion he comes to about someone being able to love him is like a this thing that he couldn't do for himself. You sort of get the impression that maybe Darlene has more to do with this, and the fact that she doesn't get on that plane and she could maybe track him through his phone still or something like that and come help him, whether it's in this reality or in an alternate loop or in an alternate reality.
In the new reality.
Right. But in some realities she does. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Elliot is going to stay, because Angela doesn't stay in whatever White Rose showed her either, right? She comes back to the Elliot reality that we are in.
Well, maybe that's the Elliot, that maybe that's the Angela from the virtuous reality that rejected it and came back to ours.
Okay.
I see what you're saying, that could essentially say the same thing. I'm not thinking this.
I mean, I guess, yeah.
I'm not thinking this from a perspective of an endless loop. I'm thinking this is like the first iteration of a loop, and that's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if Elliot continues through a loop and we sort of see it in Edge of Tomorrow way, and then we can sort of understand how he can break out of that,
yeah,
given what we know about his character and the changes he's gone through.
It seems clear to me, like, the last 20 minutes of this episode, everything from the fade to red, could be an easy cold open for a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this guy, he's living, he's got this weird, you know, this earthquake, that's weird, in New York, he's got headaches. And then, you know, it's like, oh, his wallet goes missing, and his dad's cell phone goes missing. Maybe someone's trying to steal his identity, and you find out it's him from another dimension. Like, that's the end of Act One.
Yeah.
And then... I'm guessing that the next, I bet that's because I could see going in and watching a movie like that right now, and you wouldn't have to have all these questions and stuff. That's what I think is happening.
I think there's something to the idea that also Elliot is looping through this game a couple times. Like he plays the game, he plays it White Rose's way, and he escapes on the boat, leaving his friend behind. And then he goes back through and says, no, that's not where I'm at here. I want to go back and I want to save my friend, or not even save my friend. I want to stay with my friend as the world burns, essentially. And he doesn't exit. And in an episode called Exit, I have to think that's hinting at something.
Yeah, no, you're right.
With a loop type of scenario.
But just what, you know?
I don't know. And is this a mental loop? Is this a physical loop?
Sure.
Is this a simulated loop? Every theory is still very much on the table, whether you buy into the loop theory or not.
Well, here's the other thing, the loop theory that I think is that really kind of had my jaw dropping, as someone pointed out that in season one, episode one, the root kit that Darlene made, when Elliot read the readme text file, it says, "Leave me here." And now,
fuck you, Sam.
Right?
Fuck you, Sam.
And him, because he had completely forgot that his whole role in that, and he just trusted his F Society thing, which started 5-9 hack. Yeah. Now he went through and played this game and chose to don't leave me here, and he is living this like upgraded Elliot life where 5-9 isn't even needed.
Every time
that means something. That
every
means
time
something.
Someone says fuck you, Sam, an angel on smailcorp.com gets its fucking wings.
Yep.
Every time. Smail's loving this.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's like that when I saw that, like, some of it is screenshot from the rootkit that said leave me here, I'm like, son of a fucking bitch. That's crazy.
There was also some E-Corp stuff around that too. Did you see the, like, in season one, episode one, there's a poster on the side of a train that has the E-Corp logo in F-Corp colors.
Yep. And it also has a poster that says something about heroes and villains and evil always wins.
Man.
Yeah.
This show, I don't think it's going to be a flop. Like, I have so loved the journey here that regardless of whether the ending disappoints me or not, it's great. But it has the potential to be a masterpiece.
I've never seen a show that says, oh yeah, we've had this plan out from the beginning, actually pan out.
Right.
And it mean literally what they say. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Babylon 5 is often told in like terms of like that they pretty much did that. But Breaking Bad didn't. Like, he knew where he wanted to end, but how they got there was completely, they made it up season to season.
Yeah.
Westworld, full of shit if they're saying that they intended anything to be the way it is. I mean, the jury's still out on that. But there's a lot of things where they say that, but like, man, when you look at all of the Easter eggs that he put in season one that you wouldn't understand until like the very end of season four, I'm starting to think this crazy asshole did everything intentionally and had it all mapped out. As crazy as it sounds.
You're getting me hyped.
Yeah,
you're
I know.
Like, you can't do this to me, man.
I know. It's all going to be a dream. Ellie's going to be holding the snow globe with the all safe office at the end.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's going to be Gideon.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
He's going to find out what is in his mom's safe deposit box. It's going to be a snow globe.
Oh, fuck.
With his apartment building in it.
So I guess let's talk about the scene. We've kind of talked about it a little bit, but Elliot wakes up in his apartment at 11:16.
Oh, wait. Before that, the last crucial thing we need to talk about is Elliot finds a way to love himself. Him and Mr. Robot say they love each other before
okay.
the end.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's also crucial. Like, that might also be information that has different about Elliot this time that could be yeah. beneficial, that he's found a way to love himself.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder what, if that is in fact, you know, the double Elliot thing, if one of those Elliots is in fact our Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
In that parallel universe, if any of this stuff will carry over, right? Will his experiences from whatever we want to call our
dimension. I have a suggestion, because what it looks like the dominant way to refer this in the last 24 to 48 hours on Reddit is to refer to R. Elliot as Elliot and R. Edward as Edward and R. Tyrell as Tyrell and this world as Felliot, Fedward, and Firel.
I'm going to throw a fucking monkey wrench into this.
Oh,
later,
yeah?
Later.
Is there a Frank?
There's a Frank.
Because it's his name yeah. game rules. You just leave off the F. It's his rank.
Any F name really fucks with that, doesn't it?
Frank. No, you just the name game rules.
Oh, you leave it off?
You just leave it. Just drop it. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Maybe I've never played the name game.
You haven't?
You're talking about Banana Fanafofim?
Sure. Me, my, mo, mim. But you go Frank, you go, you'd be Frank, Bobank, Banana Fanafofim, Ank, I think. Or maybe Faux Rank.
He's faux rank?
It. Yeah, faux rank. Me, okay. my, mo rank.
That's an alternate universe I don't want to get into. Yes, so Elliot wakes up in his apartment. It is 11:16 on May 9th. He's entirely different. He's happy.
Yep.
He gets ready for the day, but there's a small earthquake, and he gets a call from Angela.
Did you catch the magnitude on the Richter scale?
5.9, I know.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, how many of these references do we need?
Wasn't there a clock reference to the 11, 18 or 15?
11:16.
11:16.
So people were pointing out that if you take the time 11:16 on a clock and you flip it or essentially just rotate it around 180 degrees, it's 5.9. The hands point changed from 11:16 to 5.9.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know what it means. And at one point, Elliot's standing under a clock with 11:16 on it as he's walking into the power plant. So many references. And at this point, I'm just like, yes, we know. There's something with 11:16. There's something with 5.9.
It's 5.9 significant in the E society, and 11:16 is significant on the F society.
Could be.
So they're the upside down.
Yeah,
hit
Stranger Things theory.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets ready for the day. He's weird. He gets a call from Angela. They're getting married. He's got a good relationship with his father. Angela says he seems a little different. He calls his dad at the computer repair shop, and they've been planning a surprise for Angela. And Ellie goes to work at Allsafe, where we find everything is turned upside down except for the rock, the constant, the thing that brings you out of your illusion. Ollie's still a douchebag.
Ollie's still a massive douche.
Yep. He picks up right where he left off there. And Elliot sees the White Rose is living openly as a woman and is a philanthropist, and everything seems good there. Elliot's the CEO of Allsafe. He makes a business pitch to Tyrell, who tells Elliot, look, I think this is great, but it could be awful if we play it wrong. I could destroy everything, this fragile ecosystem, like you said. Elliot says, look, I've seen what can happen to F Corp and that I can prevent it. And we're left wondering, you know,
and I got excited for a minute, like, oh my God, does
he knows,
but no, it's just a pitch.
Yeah. They've run the scenarios.
Yeah.
And they close this deal. And then Elliot's dad congratulates him in a bar and gives him a surprise gift for Angela. This is a book. Her mom's not answering her phone and he forgot his wallet. Elliot leaves flowers for Angela at her apartment and they chat on the phone, and it seems like Elliot's super happy in this life until he arrives home at his apartment and sees his darker half.
Elliot.
If
Elliot sees Elliot.
End of episode.
So a lot to cover there. they revealed that
this is like a 20-minute sequence.
There's so many things that they revealed. They revealed that like Darlene in this reality apparently doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Now, some have speculated that Darlene told a story of her running away or being abducted by a crazy lady. Do you remember this? She told the story about being abducted and her parents eventually found her.
Yep.
But she was kind of hoping not to be found because, you know, she kind of felt special. And this tied into this book that Elliot was giving to Darlene, Angela, this first edition of, and this keeps coming up every fucking season, that from the Mixed Up Files of Miss Basil Frankweiler by E.L. Konigsberg.
Sure.
I have read this book back in elementary school, but our teacher read it to us. And it's about two kids, a brother and sister, that run away and stay in a museum, the Metropolitan Museum. And this ties into Mr. Robot in various ways. Number one, a lot of characters are seen reading in the background. Mr. Robot is seen reading in the background. Angela talks about this being the inspiration for her and Elliot running away to the Queen's Museum?
Yeah.
That served as their kind of like the reason they did that. And the core of the book is these kids find out about this mysterious donation of a statue of an angel to a museum that people think might be from Michelangelo. Michelangelo? And the kids like, you know, research it and they find out it was donated or is bought by at some old lady's auction for like $250, and they go find her. And it turns out that she challenges them to find the solution to the mystery in her mixed up files. And if they do it within an hour, then they'll win something. And they do. And they find out that she secretly donates. She has arranged to have this priceless statue given to the Met as a way to kind of support them without being, and she kind of just wanted like a secret to have in her whole life. And she was so impressed by the children's story of running away and their perseverance and figuring this out that she puts them in her will. Okay.
So they get the statue? What do they get?
That's the thing is like there is no material reward for the kids other than I guess this rich lady will bequeath them her fortune on their death. Okay. But the museum now knows that they have a priceless statue instead of a $250 pile of crap.
Yes.
I guess. Hmm. I don't know. The thing is like when I was reading the synopsis of the plot, I'm like, there's a lot of like the stuff that clearly if I read the book, it probably makes sense. Or I don't know. It's a kid's book too. So what the hell? Why bring it back up here? I mean, I got the references to the children and the brothers and sisters and running away and hiding in the museum and all that.
I mean, he and Angela also kind of, yeah, they wanted to run away.
Well, it's also, it's about an angel, and we've already made the like Angela angel connection. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so like if we properly understand it, like that's really a parable about Darlene and Elliot, and Angela is the angel that they're kind of the mystery that they're trying to jointly figure out. That's something. If also that Darlene got abducted by that kind of eccentric lady, which is kind of the, you know, Miss Basil Frankweiler of the story, that maybe that's that it's not that Elliot's only child, that she just his sister went missing.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that didn't make sense to me because, like, why would Angela tell, like, if I knew you well enough to know you had a brother that got abducted when you were, like, 9 years old,
yeah,
I wouldn't ever refer to you as an only child. That would be
which
pretty fucking tactless.
She doesn't know.
Or maybe
which implies that either Elliot hasn't told her, which I don't think is true in that version of the world. So it implies that Elliot doesn't know. Which implies that if he does have a sister, his parents never told him, but he's the older brother, so I would think he would remember having a younger sister.
Yeah, and Darlene's pretty young, but I still think you would remember having a sister.
Yeah.
But, that's everything I know about the story, and I don't think there's really a popular theory about how it fits in or how it has predictive value for what's to come.
No, I was sort of disappointed when I looked into Tolstoy's Resurrection as well, because that was the book that was sitting on Elliot's desk in the interview room, and we've seen Mr. Robot reading it before, and the only real tie-in seems to be the title. It's about the injustice of man-made laws and, like, somebody
a Tolstoy book, really?
Somebody trying to right a wrong, which I guess broadly thematically that plays into Mr. Robot, but like specifically, I wasn't seeing the connection.
So the other mystery that we have is that his father Fedward is missing his phone. Elliot misses his wallet. Felliot misses his wallet.
Okay.
And Fangela's parents were staying at their house, and apparently our Elliot visited Angela's house to get something out of there because he picked up the phone, heard Felliot on the phone, dropped the glass he was holding or whatever, shattered it and cut his hand maybe.
Okay. What is Angela's father's name in this universe?
Phony.
No. We know what it is in the other universe.
What is it?
Who's Angela's father?
Oh, shit. Yeah, you're right.
How do you modify Philip? I'm lost.
You're right.
I'm confused.
It's Philip, but it's spelled with a F instead of PH.
So, Philip?
With the hard F. The Philip.
It's Philip.
Yeah, you want to soften it with that PH. You just want a hard
Right.
Philip.
Sorry, I totally derailed you with my stupid joke.
No, that's entirely appropriate. The name game breaks down. You found the exact place where it sunk under its own weight.
Yeah, White Rose Utopia doesn't work.
Is there any other possibilities except for R. Elliot doing some kind of identity hack on Felliot or some kind of. Because like I said, I'm guessing that R. Elliot is the one that stole the wallet, stole the phone, and cased Angela's joint because.
Right.
Because I was going if like he went to Angela's house first, because that's like if you found yourself in a different dimension, maybe he goes to his apartment and, you know, sees that it's like completely different or whatever. Then he goes to Angela's apartment and then he starts putting two and two together. And then he goes to his dad's old shop location. But like, I think the way the timing works out is he kind of hit his dad first, then Angela's, then he lifted his own wallet. But to what end? I don't know. Like, what is he trying to prove? What's he trying to?
I don't know. Also, if you look at the screen that is up when Felliot meets Elliot at the very end, there seems to be a F Society mask on the screen. Mm. There's Elliot in a hoodie on the screen. Mm-hmm. All things that are remnants of the Elliot universe we know.
There was a theory that got debunked pretty quickly that I guess Elliot had a similar model cell phone in the first season, like an iPhone that had a crack screen, and people were wondering if it was the exact same phone, but I guess it's not the same model, and the crack pattern is different too. So someone is like, oh, this is the thing that survives the dimensional trips or whatever. But
phones?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all in the phones, man.
Only iPhones, though.
Only iPhones.
If you don't have an iPhone, it's not going to survive a dimensional trip.
But that's the thing. Elliot's now an Android man, so he's fucked.
That's true.
He should have kept the Android contract through season one, man.
Okay, let me throw the monkey wrench. I mentioned the monkey wrench earlier. I want to throw it now because I think I have an idea that sort of piggybacks on the theory that this is all in Elliot's head.
Okay.
And that these are... Felliot and Elliot are perhaps the second and third, or first and third, or first and second, who the fuck knows, the alters.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember back to, I think it's episode 9 of this season, the opening is Mr. Robot going to visit his wife and young Elliot in... Magda and young Elliot in that boardroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about like, oh, when are we going to tell Elliot? When are we going to tell him? We should have told him already. Young Elliot wants to tell him. Mr. Robot says, not ready.
Right.
And they eventually land on like, I'm going to show him what he did in order to sort of make all of this make sense to him.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I'm thinking. I think that when they're talking about an Elliot there, they're talking about Felliot, and that Elliot is actually the third here, and that Felliot didn't, sort of the antithesis of what we thought, that there's an angry Elliot that lashes out at people, right?
He's got a normal Elliot inside.
Crazy things. Right. He's got this normal Elliot, and telling him what he did is telling him about the 5-9 hack, that you are, because he's got missing time there. I'm trying to... I'm just trying to connect the dots on like who they could be talking about and how that switcheroo could be like mind blowing.
So this is the world you could have had, but you threw it away because it doesn't track us. Yeah. Like what is, what's the answer there? Like, hey, you shouldn't have rocked a boat because like, look at like, he's essentially got Gideon's life. Right. And you know, mm-hmm. Gideon died as a result. Like look at all these nice middle-class people that got hurt because you tried to strike a blow against the 1% of the 1%. That's kind of a disheartening moral.
Well, and they also say that like, oh, he hasn't woken up, but we've been with Elliot the entire series. Elliot's been awake the whole series.
Yeah.
It's the third that has not woken up, right?
Yes.
And so the thirds that we've seen a potential angry Elliot.
Uh-huh.
We've seen definitely this alternate universe Elliot, Felliot, who seems to be happy and well-adjusted. And I feel like showing him what he did could only really apply to someone who hasn't done things that are worse.
Right.
Or hasn't done those things himself. And I.
But what is the end game
I don't think you show angry Elliot what mm-hmm. Elliot has done.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes a difference to him. And I think Elliot knows what an angry Elliot would have done if he did mm-hmm. the 5-9 hack. Like, that's mm-hmm. not a surprise to him, but it would be to Felliot.
Yeah, and there's also this weird reversal where, like, it feels like Elliot and Tyrell switch places emotionally and tonally, if not, like, position-wise. Because, you know, Tyrell's still okay. The place where Tyrell's at. Well, I guess he's now the CEO, isn't he?
Of E-Corp, yeah.
Of F-Corp.
Oh, sorry, F-Corp, yes.
And
it's Tyrell.
And he's the CEO of All Safe.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just, like, so I think you're right. There's something to that. This is something that Mr. Robot is doing to try to get a reaction out of one or more Elliot personas.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what the end game is because
and is it coming too late? Like, right? Are they gonna die here in a nuclear meltdown?
Yeah.
And this is just Mr. Robot saying, "Okay, now's the time."
Well, someone also pointed out that like, no, to what extent does Mr. Robot get to control the things that the Elliot sees and experiences?
Yeah.
Because he's the one that opens the door and says, oh my God, everything's in fire in here, and then he shuts the door.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's one of the theories that like kind of is along the lines of this is almost like a Ghost of Christmas Future, like Mr. Robot guiding Elliot through like, look how bad you'll fuck up the life of everyone.
Sure.
Is that he's putting, this isn't a false, but I don't know, man, because White Rose shot herself in the head.
Mm-hmm.
There's bodies all over Washington. Like, there's a limit to how much this can be in his head, it seems to me. Like, I guess that's the one danger I have in the show. It's like, it'll be so much in its head that, like, almost all of the emotional and character journey that we've been on is going to be seen as kind of a moot point or gets reset. And I don't know. That can be satisfying, too. Like I used the Memento movie example. Like, that's a guy mm-hmm. where, you know, the character itself literally didn't make any progress. But that's kind of the point. Like, the world fulcrumed around him or something. I don't know. It's a weird, not happy ending, happy ending.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I guess the question then that I have sort of following on to the idea that this would all be in Elliot's head
mm-hmm.
and it's not an alternate dimension is, did White Rose just actually kill herself? Because, like, I don't recall her ever having to kill herself to show Angela what she did,
but
because Angela
was
buying in.
We never got the full pitch from Angela. We saw the beginning right. of like her sitting down and taking the pitch seriously, and the next thing we saw her, you know, she was back in her home, and like the time skipped. There's also
but
a
she
lot
also
of,
took the bait. Like, she took the bait of her mother, or sorry, her father coming back. No, her mother coming back. She but, took that bait, and she was all in, and she wanted to see what White Rose
right.
had to offer. Whereas Elliot very much doesn't.
But I'm thinking, like, that's if that was the thing that seals the deal for everyone. But I don't know, because there's also, after Angela became a true believer, she has this meeting with the car salesman, Irving,
yeah,
where she asks him, have you seen White Rose's project and does it work? And he says, yes, I've seen it. And she says, does it work? And he goes, you know, technology, the advancements people make, anything's possible. Which is a great non-answer.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, you've seen it, motherfucker. Is it possible or not?
And I guess if Angela had seen it at that point, why would she ask that?
Right. But so, and if like White Rose had shot herself in the head and then presumably been back later, why would she say? So like,
but she immediately after whatever White Rose shows her
yeah.
in whatever fashion she shows it to her, goes to her lawyer and says, call off this this lawsuit that we've got going on. Yeah. So she was convinced of whatever it was then and there.
The next two episodes got to be a hell of a 2 hours of television because all this stuff is going to sift into one column or another. So we don't have long to wait.
Yeah, that's about all I got. I really don't have a good answer as to what next.
I don't think
two
anyone. There's
be.
Not like a runaway pet theory that everyone's got. Yeah. Like there's several different flavors. Like I think we've outlined the three different ways it can be. It's all in the head. It's a simulation, or it's an alternate dimension,
or there's a fourth truly explosive outcome that we haven't even begun to ponder.
Yeah,
that Sam Esmail has been had in his back pocket
because all the
time.
All the looping and stuff is essentially variations of those main themes. Like, you know, is it time travel? Is it a dimensional loop? Is it, you know, a intrusive memory he's stuck in? Like, they're all similar mechanics with like different like underlying causes. So,
and my feeling going into the final episode is I'm kind of open to whatever this show is going to do, as long as it does it well and as long as it can convince me that the time has been worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it doesn't have very far to run with that baton because my time has very much felt worth it throughout the series.
You were critical of some of the pop choices they made in last week's episode. What do you think of this episode score?
Better.
Yeah. Consciously a lot more like wall-to-wall licensed music, though. Like, it is much more noticeable than it's been. Like, I feel like it's not that Mr. Robot never uses noticeable licensed music, but it's like once an episode or so. This was like, I felt like 30% of it was scored by some kind of pop tune or
The tone
Beach Boy throwback
didn't really feel as off to me. Like, I guess okay. So here's the thing. I was unsettled in both of these episodes, but I was unsettled in a way that felt inauthentic with the Darlene Dom stuff because I did not believe Irving when he says everything is happy and Dark Army doesn't care about you and everything's fine and you've got a happily ever after here. I just fundamentally didn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Here, I'm not stuck in that. The scene that unsettled me is White Rose and or sorry, White Rose is like whatever she showed Elliot, this alternate dimension. I felt very kind of untethered during this whole thing. Like, what am I seeing? It felt incongruous with everything I knew, but it wasn't like, oh, that music just didn't fit the tone of Mr. Robot as I know it. Or like the music wasn't giving me false notes here. It was just the music was a piece of what they were doing in those weird scenes, as opposed to one where I was supposed to, I guess, take it on face value.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't have a problem with it this time.
All right.
That OK Go song. That's kind of a banger anyway.
Yeah, no, like I said, all of the songs I thought were catchy or thematically appropriate.
Yeah.
But then I didn't have as big a Carly Rae meltdown as you did last week.
Sure.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering The Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
Are we ready to get to feedback, man?
Let's do it.
All right. You can send feedback to robot at Bald Move. Reminder, next week it's Christmas. We are not coming on the 25th to wrap up Mr. Robot. We will be coming in on the following Monday.
Yeah.
To wrap up the two-episode extravaganza and also consider extra-long feedback, whatever we need to do, because it'll be the series wrap-up of Mr. Robot. Yeah, that's it might be a seven-hour podcast. I don't know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I mean, we've been averaging long podcasts of late. So let's move on to robot@baldmove.com. So where you want to send the feedback. Let's move to Dan from Connecticut. Last week, Mr. Robot invented a non-existent rest stop in a fictional dam in Hamden, Connecticut. It might be a reference to the most significant dam in Hamden, Connecticut, at the former Eli Whitney gun factory site. Whitney was an inventor responsible for two paradigm shifts in American society. The cotton gin that changed the national economy so dramatically it fractured our country, because that's what I think slavery was on its way out, and suddenly that made it profitable again. Hmm. And the idea of interchangeable components and manufactured goods. The site is now home to the Whitney Water Purification Facility and Park, among other things. The landmark building has attracted national attention both for the striking appearance and the underlying technology. While it's unlikely that Esmail was referencing the current treatment facility, I think the Hamden rest stop was a small homage to Eli Whitney. The Hamden connections are deeper than just the allusions to Whitney. The creator of ALF, Mr. Paul Fusco, was also born in New Haven, Connecticut, and reportedly developed ALF while working in Hamden. Our first robot road trip featured ALF, and our second visit was his birthplace. All right. I don't know if that has any kind of predictive power or why he would want to hint that. I can see definitely the Eli Whitney, you know, like being a huge part of like the Industrial Revolution and also inadvertently prolonging the horrors of slavery as something that Esmail would like to play with. But beyond that, I don't know.
Yeah.
Armando, since day one, White Rose / the Dark Army has been a troublesome partner and existential threat to Elliot and everything and everyone he cares about. Also, since day one, everyone's known that the Washington Township Project was her raison d'être. How do you say that?
A reason for being.
Okay.
That's how you say it.
Let's say that. Also, since day one, everyone's known that the Washington Township Project was her reason for being, for which no number of dollars or lives were too much to pay. How is it possible that E-Dog knows minutia about his therapist's sex life and simultaneously have zero knowledge of or curiosity about White Rose's elephant in the White Township living room? If only to have leverage on her, you'd think he'd want to know something. He knows they killed Angela, Cisco, Trenton, Mobley, and have long been wanting to kill him and Darlene. A little research on what she seems up to is way, way, way in order. Folks have told to me in response, well, Elliot just doesn't know what the project is. Bullshit. He's supposed to help with the Congo move. How's he going to help to do that with zero details? I smell a big reveal or massive plot hole. My hope is that the third altar is down and deep with White Rose's machine somehow and has kept it secret from both Elliot and Mr. Robot. If the reason that he's dealing with it now is because he just found out Angela wanted him to, or is it the last thing on his to-do list, I'm punching Esmail in the nuts. What do you guys think?
I mean, you're not wrong. I don't see how you move an entire project not knowing the scope of the project.
Especially since like your whole character arc has been one succession of well-meaning fuck ups that have caused more misery and death than you were trying to prevent after another. Mm-hmm. So it did seem weird to me that he gets a thumb drive with a couple PDFs on the inner workings of a nuclear plant. And he's like, oh yeah, I gotta do this. But I was also, I felt like the episode did a pretty good job to have part of Elliot raise that concern too. Like, when is it ever going to be enough? Like, you say it's this power plant, but then what are you going to find out when there's a B site in the Congo?
Yeah.
And what are you going to find out when they're making dinosaurs on a Costa Rican island? Mm-hmm. And then what are you going to do? I guess like the show itself is kind of criticizing Elliot for like never knowing when to stop with his fucking around.
It is. I guess I understood that to be a, like the emailer to be questioning how Elliot could get these things done and still remain in a state where he knew nothing of the project's nature and that he would have to be shown.
That's what,
what she's talking about. So like I come down on, I agree with the emailer there.
Do you think that it's something that they kept hidden from him in much the same way that part of him filtered out all his bodies and bloody mayhem that he walked through? Like, it keep him focused, his eyes on the prize?
Could be.
But why? What part of Elliot...
I still don't understand... I still don't quite understand Elliot's value to White Rose overall and why she's kept him alive so long.
She reiterated their importance and their, like, joinedness of the time in their time stream.
But why? But what is the connection? What is it? Like, I understand, okay, it's maybe this moment. It's maybe...
So... I saw a pretty interesting theory pointing out that like everyone that gets into the F society or the F Corp world kills or dies, has to die to get there.
Okay.
And that we know White Rose asserted that Edward Alderson was a volunteer subject for her, one of the initial volunteer subjects for her program. Mm-hmm. And it seems like a father who is racked from guilt because he's preyed on his child would want to wake up in a world where he was free of this compulsion or whatever to deal with, and like that would lead him to volunteer to die and go to this better world. Mm-hmm. Is there anything there that's germane to this that like
probably, but I mean, I've known that there is something for a very long time. I just don't know what the thing is. It's like Elliot's relationship with her project. He knows there's some project. He just doesn't know what it is.
Well, but that would be, I guess, why she feels connected to Elliot. Like, his father might be the first volunteer subject, and now the son is here.
And she says the same to Angela. Like, I don't know why you're still alive. Like, I predicted you'd be dead. Things are swirling around your life and my life, and they're connected. Yeah. Which, kind of leans you toward, like, Washington Township is important to Elliot.
Because I don't think that she maneuvered events where Elliot was important to her. I think Elliot happened to be in her path, and she found that fascinating.
Yeah.
Because of the connection to her father. I guess that's where I was going with the dad being a volunteer guinea pig for that. Okay. All right, Scott from Chicago. Did you guys catch the Elliot White Rose Washington Township scene ended with the screen fading to orange? Perhaps a ode to Stanley Kubrick's A Clockwork Orange.
It was red.
Yeah, it's looking pretty red. Unless this windscreen on my mic is orange, in which case my whole life has been a lie.
I mean, you got so much red, black, and white in Mr. Robot. It's kind of the colors of Mr. Robot.
I do think that like it faded to red, but then his apartment looked very orangey in the early goings. But I don't know. He's not above biting on Kubrick, clearly.
Yeah.
But I don't think that was an instance of it. Scott, he continues, also, when Elliot walked into the Washington Township plant's office, it appeared the hallway scenes that the rooms were numbered in the 400s. Could this mean anything in terms of the 400 error codes? Could be something to explore.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, I could see that being something that Esmail is playing with. Also, I noticed that when the new Elliot walked into F Corp, there was a vase of white roses on the reception desk. Is this a sign that she's still in charge? I think it's clear that like whether she's evil or virtuous, as the richest woman in the world, she is still somewhat behind the scenes pulling the strings of F Corp.
Sure.
Seems to me. Also, any chance that unknown customer walked into Mr. Aldrin's shop and left was Vera? Nah, I think it's R. Elliot, not Felliot, but Elliot.
People are saying they can't wait until we see Mayor Vera
running
articles
town.
In the newspaper. Yeah, I think that'd be pretty funny. It's a back to
well,
the
I mean, he
homage.
Died. He crossed the threshold. So
true, very true.
Might be
the machine was on then.
The what?
The machine must have been on.
The machine's been on this whole time. This whole time. There also, it's so what do you make of the connection between the earthquakes and the headaches and the power surges? Because we know that this machine requires a lot of power, and whenever Angela experienced like time distortions, there was always like a localized brownout. Mm-hmm. That has to be a connection too.
I agree.
Yeah.
But don't know what it means.
Yeah. Gabe D, I heard you mention that Sam Esmail said that this two-part series finale is essentially where the original film screenplay would have taken us had that iteration been made. That said, it would also make sense that there being two Elliots would be inherent to its conventional endgame. As you've mentioned before, Rami has an identical twin brother named Sammy. Was casting someone with an identical twin part of the plan from the jump?
Oh, boy.
It seems like way more than a happy accident that this is where the story has taken us. I don't know, because there's been so much just jaw-dropping twin work on like Fargo season 3, all of the Deuce. Yep. Like some of the shit they got up to with the Frankie and Vinny and on season 3 the Deuce was incredible.
Yep.
Like smashing cake in each other's faces, hugging. It's gone a long ways from, you know, cheating mirrored halves of cameras and stuff.
Oh yeah.
So so what do you think? Do you think it's plausible that they would hire an actor that has a identical twin, or they would just use special effects?
I mean, they certainly could use special effects, but I feel like if they ever thought about it, it was probably in terms of like, oh, this will really fuck with the audience when they discover this.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to see Sammy. This is Sammy Malek.
Plus, Sammy's like I said, I've noticed that he's like a little thicker. I'm not saying he's fat. I mean, he's just like a little bit fuller in the face, a little bit maybe beefier in of a build. And
I think
it'd
be noticeable. Side by side, it would be noticeable.
Yeah.
More so than the CG work they could do.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Tom, the therapist from Atlanta, stopping by again, and you know, he'd previously praised what he thought the psychological realism of some of the sequences in this season. But he says he's writing to say that Elliot's epic telling off of White Rose felt somewhat flat for him. Says Elliot's magnum opus amounts to this: there are people who will continue to love you even though you hurt them and push them away and punish them for loving you. That's why world is worth saving. That's true, and there's a name for it. It's called let me think here. I had it. Oh yes, right. Codependency. You're going to try and save the world of the pro codependency argument? And that the people that are codependent and put up with you punishing them are worth saving, but everyone else can go fuck themselves? Not today, Elliot. I ain't buying it. And I think a show that seemingly was so good at telling stories about addiction and psychology should know the dangers of praising and enabling behaviors and potentially shaming boundary-setting behaviors with people who are hurting you.
Man, that's not what I got from that. I
Me
got
either.
A feeling of generosity, a feeling of love, a feeling of empathy and caring.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
As opposed to a parasitic relationship.
Yeah, like I think there's a way to have love for like in the I'm thinking the arc of The Bubbles Went On and The Wire, where like, you know, when he's such a inveterate heroin addict that he like steals from everyone. In fact, when he's like at a rock bottom, he goes to wants to stay with his sister, and she refuses because the last few times she's allowed him to do so, he's stolen from her.
Yeah.
So after he gets his act cleaned up to a certain extent, she agrees to let him stay in her basement, but she locks the top door so he can't get access to the rest of her house. And the final scene of the series is Bubbles walking up that door and going through that open door because he has demonstrated enough trust that, you know, she's built that back up and allowed her back in her life. And I think what they're going at is not that like Darlene just puts up with anything that Elliot does. Like, it seems like she does hold him accountable and she does make him apologize and he has to make amends. It's more of like, you know, you always have to leave that door somewhat cracked. Maybe you can lock it for a time, but if a person makes sincere changes and you love them unconditionally, then I guess you should always be rooting for them and be ready to take them back when they start making those positive changes.
Yeah, and they're espousing two sort of competing worldviews, the cynical one and the more empathetic and, I don't know, upbeat one. Because, you know, that person could, in a less caring world, just sort of write you off. Right. And I think that's what so many people have done to Elliot, right? They've either abused him, they've written him off, they want nothing to do with him. He's not worth the effort. And I think the difference between those people and Darlene is she cares.
And you can't love or care for anyone if you don't love and care for yourself. And like this, you know, if nothing else, Elliot at this point in the story has learned to accept at least some part of himself. He's learned to love the Mr. Robot part of him, and the Mr. Robot part of him has learned to live
through the love that other people showed to him. He wouldn't have been able to do it without that.
Right. And like Darlene said, like, you're not so bad once you stop being an asshole. So like there's the recognition that like he's made some strides too. So that's how way I see it anyway. Last up is Mask.
And his being an asshole was a reaction to the way he had been treated by people.
Sure. No, I mean, he's
like,
got
everything down to like his psyche fracturing into these multiple personalities because of the trauma he experienced.
Yeah, these are all adaptive things he learned as a child to protect himself from trauma. Like from the multiple personalities to the disassociation to, you know, the compartmentalization he does mentally and emotionally. It's all stuff that, you know, he had to come up with just to survive. So anyway, Mask has the last email saying, I loved how they used every music track just perfectly. Agreed. If people weren't sure about Rami's talent before, oh my God, that monologue. Wow. Did Rami get anything on the Golden Globes?
Yeah, he got nominated for Best Actor in a Drama.
Okay, cool. But the show itself did not.
Nothing.
Okay, well.
No supporting actors, no nothing. I think.
That's the other thing is like, man, B.D. Wong.
I know. Phenomenal.
Not even get a nomination.
I think Darlene, Carly Chaykin's been doing some great work.
I mean, there's a lot of great television. There's a lot of great work being done all around.
It's true.
But still, award shows, they suck, right?
They do.
The most beautiful thing is how Esmail changed the framing, colors, character interactions in a new world. Instead of what we already know from him, a weird framing to dark tones, it's really refreshing to see how he's telling a story from a cinematography standpoint. I thought it was interesting. When I got this email, I actually watched a lot of the first episode while I was taking my notes to see. It's Sam Raimi, it's not like 99% of the time he uses the extreme angles and shots and stuff. It's because like a lot of times when you're having a conversation, it's pretty traditional A-B kind of like footage. But what definitely has changed in the F society or the E society, F Corp world, is that they've removed the Matrix kind of blue-green filter and everything has got a much warmer palette.
Yeah, for sure.
And I didn't confirm this, but people were pointing out that there was points where, like, when he was digging the glass out of the trash, that maybe the filter was back in place, and maybe that's trying to tell you something about the nature of the reality. And
I mean, there were a lot of more obvious moments.
Oh yeah. When the E Corp switches to F Corp
for F's, and the incongruities in the whole situation.
And that's where we're going to leave you until after Christmas. Again, we'll be back not next week, but the following week on Monday to record the episode for the final two episodes, which are going to air as a single block this Sunday. I can't wait to see it. It's going to be amazing. Yeah. I can't wait to hear what everybody thinks of it. It's going to be interesting to see all these Schrodinger theories collapse into a bunch of boxes of dead cats and one live one. And hopefully it's the prettiest, cutest of the litter.
We'll see.
Because it would be amazing for, it'd be qualifying something I've never seen before. A show this meticulously plotted, apparently from the beginning, sticking the landing and being very satisfying. That would be amazing, and I'm rooting for it.
Same here.
So robot@baldmove.com. When you got your hot takes, you want to send them in to us. We'll see you after Christmas. Until then, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Talk to you next week after next. Bye.